And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Thank you for tuning in this afternoon. Juneau is one of 9 communities selected for an annual grant by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, a health philanthropy group. It announced today that the community was selected as a Culture of Health Prize winner for its commitment to uplifting Alaska Native culture and healing. For more than a decade, the foundation has highlighted and awarded grants to dozens of communities across the country that work to promote health equity and inclusion. Hatoosh Latoosh Coalition applied for the $250,000 grant on behalf of the community. It's a nonprofit that offers Indigenous-based healing practices and reconciliation with the history of colonization in Juneau. Ka Yahahi Shaknegi Muriel Reed is a storyteller for Hatoosh Latoosh Coalition. He says the award honors decades of healing work done by the community.
We just want to show so much gratitude to the community. There are so many people that have put their hands into this work for generations and generations.
The award highlights different local organizations and residents who've contributed to reviving Indigenous culture and healing generational trauma. The nonprofit pointed to community efforts like Orange Shirt Day, which remembers the harmful legacy of Indigenous boarding schools, and the revitalization of local Indigenous languages happening in Juneau schools. Muriel Reed says there's still much work to be done, but it's important to celebrate the growth already taking place.
There are so many places in Juneau where the only reason these wonderful moments of healing are happening is because of cross-sector work and collaboration and community all working together towards a common goal of healing.
Reed says Hatoosh Latoosh Coalition will use the funding to continue to support ongoing work already happening in Juneau. Flood inundation maps that model how Juneau's Mendenhall River levee should perform have finally arrived. And as KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, there's a lot of information to wade through.
The maps show that the levee would protect Mendenhall Valley residents against a flood of the same 16-foot magnitude as last year. Robert Barr, deputy city manager, says the Hesco Barrier levee effectively pushes water into a western floodplain where nobody lives.
At an event similarly sized and somewhat higher than what we saw last year, the Hescos are extremely protective of property in the valley.
Although the barriers end at River Court Way, the levee is modeled to also protect downstream buildings like Safeway, the library, Thunder Mountain High School, and the Alaska Club. Upstream, it looks like there's almost no difference between having the levee or not at this flood height. An 18-foot flood would be a different story. In terms of volume, Barr says this would be about 50% more water than the 16-foot scenario. The maps show that water would not flow over the top of the levee. However, some water would seep around the end of the barriers near Diamond Park and flow through Meander Way. In this scenario, models show that more homes and businesses, both upstream and downstream, would be severely flooded, including the neighborhood near the airport. The levee would still protect against some of that downstream damage and could possibly increase some upstream damage. But Barr says the barriers wouldn't cause water to reach areas that weren't already going to flood in their absence. The city's model of a 20-foot flood shows only what could happen without the barriers. Barr says maps projecting whether the levee would work in such a catastrophic flood are forthcoming. He says this would be double the water seen in a flood like last year's, and that the model shows the absolute worst-case scenario, combining every possible thing that could happen at once.
I think things like twice as much water in the basin, faster discharge rate, a 200-year atmospheric river event, high tide.
But the likelihood of such an event is unknown. And that's a key point. The maps simply show what might happen if Mendenhall Lake rose to a certain level. You put in a number, the model spits out a scenario. It's not predicting the probability of these scenarios. Barr says that because the model is built on recent flood data, it's most likely to be accurate at predicting where the water will go in floods similar to those the community has experienced. That's 16 feet and below.
The model that we have is a model, and it's a best guess, and it's most accurate based on what happened in the past.
Where the maps show flood heights that have never happened before, from 17 to 20 feet, they have a lower confidence rating. Also, the maps only show whether areas would flood or not. They don't show how deep the water would be on any given property. Barr says that researchers are working on an interactive website so people can mouse over the maps and see projected depths. Those maps are expected to be released later this month. City officials say they'll take this information to the Assembly on May 12 to discuss whether to extend the barriers further down. Residents can tune in. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And initial results from a study of humpback whale health in Juneau found that the area is particularly important for females and their calves. KTOO's Alex Solomon reports that the findings could drive the city to consider restricting the growth of the whale watching industry.
That's the sound of a humpback whale in Juneau's North Pass between Lincoln Island and Shelter Island. Pregnant and nursing humpbacks rely on the protected waters near Juneau to fatten up on herring and krill while raising their young. And incidents of entanglements and collisions with boats have mostly affected calves over the past 4 years. These are the key preliminary results from a study of Juneau's whale health that started in 2020 over rising concerns about whether the multi-million-dollar whale-watching industry might be harming the whales here. The city provided a $160,000 grant using cruise ship passenger fees to support the research. Heidi Pearson is a marine biology professor at the University of Alaska Southeast. She leads the Juneau Whale Health Project and says the team's findings should lead to greater conservation efforts since mothers drive population growth.
The fact that we're finding that females stay here longer, oftentimes with their calves, means that we should probably think about some additional precautions to protect this really precious component of the population.
It's illegal for vessels to get within 100 yards of humpback whales, to speed near them, block their path, or disrupt their behavior. There are also voluntary guidelines that some whale-watching companies follow to ease human impacts. But Alexandra Pierce, the city's tourism director, says that isn't enough.
We're the biggest whale-watch destination in the world. We don't know of any destination with more vessels on the water. It's a numbers problem. Even if individual operators are behaving well, and a lot of them are.
In 2023, a whale calf named Tango was killed by a vessel. While the authorities could not identify what kind of boat struck the calf, they said that collisions are fairly common. Pierce says she's working with the industry to try to come up with a plan to regulate the number of whale-watching boats on the water. Right now, there's no limit, and around 80 boats operate here. The research team is still working through the data. Critically, their final results will analyze whale stress levels, comparing the early COVID-19 pandemic years when there was less boat traffic to the last couple of years when tourism picked up again. To do this, they measured the stress hormone, cortisol, in samples of blubber taken from live whales. A peer-reviewed scientific paper is coming later this year or next. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And a Washington state-based conservation group is suing the National Marine Fishery Service over king salmon, again. The Wildfish Conservancy filed suit earlier this month in U.S. District Court to compel NMFS to complete its endangered species determination for king salmon in the Gulf of Alaska. The group previously sued in 2020 to halt commercial trolling for kings in southeast Alaska to protect an endangered population of killer whales in Puget Sound. Nat Herz is covering the story for the National Journal. He spoke recently with KCAW's Robert Woolsey.
Nat, what is the Wildfish Conservancy asking for this time?
About a year ago, a little more than a year ago, the Wildfish Conservancy, which is a Washington state-based conservation group, filed a petition with the Biden administration asking for a determination that king salmon all across the Gulf of Alaska fit the criteria for threatened or endangered under the Endangered Species Act. And there is a deadline in the Endangered Species Act that requires the federal government to act on those petitions within a year of their filing. And fast forward 1 year plus a sort of legally required notification period, and the federal government has not issued that finding yet. And so the Wildfish Conservancy, with their lawyers that are battle tested from previous conflicts in southeast Alaska and across the Pacific Northwest, filed a lawsuit last week to force the hand of now the Trump administration to issue a determination on this request to list king salmon as endangered or threatened.
This is a completely different lawsuit than the 2020 lawsuit the Wildfish Conservancy filed to try and block southeast trolling to protect southern resident killer whales.
Fair to say it is separate. I don't think it's totally fair to say that it's entirely unrelated. I think, you know, they are from their position down there in Washington, I think, looking at Alaska and saying, you know, these are species of fish that or populations of fish that sort of have a bearing on folks down here in Washington state, both because I think there's some mixing of the fish and their predators, but also I think just because there are people in Washington state that visit Alaska and have a stake in the harvesting of these species. But I think it's very clear that the Wild Fish Conservancy, which I think has done a lot of work previously on conservation in the Pacific Northwest, is like seems to be making Alaska and the Gulf of Alaska an increasing focus.
Nat, in your article in the Northern Journal, you did have a response from somebody at NOAA who didn't seem to say, oops, we goofed, but more like, oh, we're taking our time.
If I had to guess, I think there are entire law firms or attorneys that probably do a pretty good bulk of their business just filing these lawsuits against federal agencies that haven't acted quickly enough on these Endangered Species Act petitions. I think it's like this is a pretty common thing that you have this 12-month deadline in law, but sort of from a practical standpoint, it's not always possible for the agencies to issue their decision in that time frame. And so, you know, I think you're right. Like, yeah, the federal official that corresponded with me about it basically was like, you know, we're working on it. And there are also some state biologists that have kind of been attached to the team at the National Marine Fisheries Service that I guess is reviewing some of the statistical data. And so it sounds like, you know, there is robust review going on. Maybe that has been somewhat disrupted. I mean, there have been all kinds of headlines about the chaos at the National Marine Fisheries Service, specifically because that agency, I think, was really heavily targeted by DOGE, the Elon Musk like government efficiency arm. And so I'm sure that has probably disrupted them a little bit. But I doubt that, you know, this is something that is not already on their radar and something that is underway, as they kind of said.
And that was the Northern Journal's Nat Herz speaking with KCAW's Robert Woolsey. And as for the weather here in Juneau today, it's 47 degrees, and it looks like we have a little bit more rain on the way this afternoon. Tomorrow, it looks like we might not have too much rain, but that picks up again in the evening. And Thursday and Friday look rainy as well, with temperatures getting a little bit warmer, mid-40s to low 50s. This is KTOO.